Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
It's not raining, it's not pouring, and Scott Telford's here. Welcome, Scott.
Welcome to yourself and Josh Brown.
Hello there, fellas. How are you doing?
Pretty damn good. Now, we thought we'd check in on... We might end up doing more of these in the weeks that will be arriving in the future, depending on what other news items pop up. We're just going to leave ourselves free and easy to drop in on whatever happens across the gaming industry. But we thought we might try and check in on the three major companies, you know, across the industry themselves, that being PlayStation, or Sony PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo. So we're going to start with PlayStation stuff. We're going to see exactly where they are, talk about their plans for 2022, and just sort of check in on where they're at the start of this year, considering it's a big old weird dry month, but there's a ton of stuff scheduled for February and March, and not that much after that. There's a lot of space to be filled, which is also to say that the first thing to talk about is the fact that we've kind of happened upon this before we started recording, but Sony don't have a single first-party console PS5 exclusive for the rest of the year. They have tons of third-party exclusives where they've paid for stuff. Some of these are timed exclusives, and the likes of Forspoken, Ghostwire Tokyo, Final Fantasy 16, maybe Final Fantasy 7 Remake Part 2. So they're very much propped up by their third-party deals, and obviously they'll do all sorts of different deals when Call of Duty and everything comes around again. But where are you guys on that sort of revelation? What do you guys think of, like, I guess Ben Roy first, like, what do you think of the first-party lineup being so barren this year?
It's weird because it's barren, but then it's also not, because like they're leaning on the PS4 crutch, in there. They're leaning on how many billion PS4s are out in the wild. And as much as I would like to be like, I'm taking a very diplomatic approach to this, as much as I would like to be annoyed by certain things, at the same time, if the chips are all blockaded in one section of the world and we can't get those chips around everywhere, and they're all being grabbed for, whether it be, I don't know, your fridge, a car, or just something else. Just anything that wants one of those. Maybe Amiibos one day will all need those chips as well. But it's... I've probably not got the hot take, but Sony have got some of the goods coming, so I'm kind of happy of that. And there's, I don't know, I can't be one or the other, if that's weird for me to say.
I think, well, see, the thing
like
is,
I'm being paid by Jim Ryan himself.
No, I think one thing, like the overall thing for me is like this weird kind of feeling of acceptance for the state of the industry. Like it feels like, although we're going to get, like I said, February and March is going to have a lot of awesome things in it, it still feels like overall it's going to be 2023 before things kick back in full, or at least something approximating 2018, 2019 in terms of the overall schedule. So I'm kind of just, I'm going back and forward on how much I can accept that. I'm going to have to, but like just that general feeling. But yeah, I think it is like an interesting statement on where Sony are at, that they just, like Ben said, they're doubling down on the PS4 stuff. They announced that they're going to have another million PS4s for sale. Loads of their PS5 games were made cross-compatible, the likes of Gran Turismo 7 and obviously God of War and Horizon are both coming to PS4 as well, which has a weirdly, for me, muted feeling on what the PS5 represents. But Josh, what do you think of what do you think of all that stuff so far?
First off, it did blow my mind realizing yesterday that they have no first party PS5 game, at least that they've announced so far. Mm-hmm. But similar to Ben Roy, I'm kind of diplomatic on it, and I can't get too angry about it, because the games that they do have coming out, the first party exclusives that they do have coming to PS4 and PS5, are so exciting, and they are such big names. You know, we've got some absolutely crazy hitters with Horizon, with Gran Turismo, with God of War. And they're certainly going to keep me interested. There's certainly going to be things that I definitely jump in and play. But on the other side of that, as someone who owns a PS5 and is waiting for PS5 dedicated games to release from the first party, it sucks that they don't have at least one announced so far. Yeah, we've got some third party and some second party exclusives coming to the PS5 that I'm sure are going to be exciting as well. But, you know, I look back on last year, I look at Returnal, which was PS5 only. I look at Demon's Souls the year before that. Like, those experiences are the ones that have stayed with me personally. And to not have a marquee title like that to look forward to maybe towards the end of the year at the time of recording, that's a shame, especially when we've got Xbox, who actually has that. You know, we'll get into more of that if we do a podcast on them in future weeks, but they do have at least a couple of Xbox Series X and S exclusives from their first party studios coming. And that's just kind of weird, where a few years ago, you know, it seemed like this outcome was going to be flipped. It felt like Sony was going to go all in on first-party PS5 games and Xbox were going to hold off a little bit, but that hasn't really happened.
That's the weird thing. Like I said, they Sony doubled down on the whole 1 million more PS4s thing, whilst almost within the same week, it sort of came out that Microsoft discontinued all versions of the Xbox One at the end of 2021. So if you want an Xbox now, obviously going forward, it's the series systems, it's the new generation, which, like, I would argue is the way to go. Obviously, they have the whole stuff with backwards compatibility and operating, making titles work on the whole family of Xboxes. But at some point, you know, like, we all bought into this new generation, whether it was launched early or not, and obviously there's the pandemic and everything else, but I think that side of it is kind of just interesting, being like, oh, we're gonna have to wait until there's stuff that truly justifies what the systems can do. We should talk about God of War versus, or with, Horizon Forbidden West just for a bit, because where are you guys at on both those games? Like, I sort of mentioned before that I feel that the hype towards those games is quite muted by the fact that they're cross-compatible, and I don't know if that's just like a general sense of, like, I definitely feel that. I just feel like I'm like, well, they're sort of, I'm like default excited. I want to see what happens in those stories. But I feel like because they are, you know, made with PS4 in mind, I feel like a lot of the PS5-ness of those games is going to be, you know, better frame rates, better resolution, maybe a bit of background detail. Like, there was a quote from one of the Horizon developers talking about Forbidden West on the PS5, and they just said that the water will be more immersive. And I'm just like, it's going to be stuff like that where I'm like, okay, sure. Like, I mean, I'd take the best version of the game, but I don't feel like it's going to be that much of a showcase of what the system can do.
Can I bridge the gap between that and just the last one for a moment? Because I feel like, are we entering a new point when, like, jump to generations are almost non-existent in a way? Because if you think about it, before Xbox, they took the original Xbox and put a cartridge back, they put a bullet in the back of that head as soon as the 360 came out, and that was dead, right? And PlayStation kept the PS2 around for a while, and it seems to be on the Sony side, it only seems to be an artificial sort of like cap, because they did the cell processor, which mucked a lot of things up for everyone. And then when they got away from that, it felt like another jump, because things couldn't carry across so easily. So it feels like there's a weird sort of like artificial step there. And then, like, with all these Microsoft exclusives, if you look at them, how many are just one? I try not to say that. How many is just like some sort of weird fanboy would in a tweet? where, like, how many of them are just Bethesda games that were going to be only next gen? And then if you think about that, like, then if you take that away, what was really there? And now I know that it's like just looking into the weeds of that stuff, but there were just two things that sort of like Sony have a history of, like, keeping stuff going, where Microsoft was just like, get it in the bin. Let's go. We need a new version of, we need a new version of work.
Trash it.
Clip it. Throw them in the pit of Clippy. They're never coming back. And as we move to, like, and if you think, like, I love Returnal, right? I didn't bother with Ratchet and Clank, but if you think about these and Demon's Souls, I thought was great. And if you look at those games, what meant that they could only be on the PS5? I don't think there was really much that couldn't, maybe like longer loading times or some reduction of environments or something like that. But I don't really think there was anything that was that hard line. I don't think we've had anything like the hard line, like, sort of thing, like even the Medium, which is such a weird game to be only on next gen, when the reason for that is because they couldn't render the two worlds significantly on all,
which they don't even do that much of in that game. Like, it looks good when they do, but
last hardware.
Yeah, I think to drill it down is one of my fundamental kind of, not necessarily an active disappointment, but I'm just a bit like, oh, we gotta wait a bit longer for this. Like, I just, and where are the games that do what you said, that fully showcase what the systems can do?
To bring it full circle to the point where it may sound like I was gonna ignore it, but with the God of War and Horizon stuff, it's weird. I'm not a scientist, right? And I'm not someone who actually makes video games.
No, turn out not a scientist.
Because I'm not that clever. But like, it seems like they'd be, you've got to make these decisions a long time ago, right? And it just seems like, I don't know if we're losing out on much, but then that seems like, am I being too diplomatic again, where we should have the new stuff? Or because right now I'm not really chomping at the bit for any of these games. I'll buy them all. Like, it's weird. I think we said on our most excited four games, and I did that podcast on not really bothered about anything at the moment this year. Maybe
just acceptance of it. Yeah.
Maybe Stray and Starfield, that's about it. But I think it's because, I don't know, because there was excitement for Uncharted 2, right? I was like, oh, Uncharted 2, I can't wait for this game. And like, or the Resistance series going forward, or whenever
right.
Resistance Remastered, you little. But you know what I mean? Like, there seems to be just more of it. And are we just too used to, I'm not just saying this and crap on Xbox, the Sony seal of quality, you know, the Nintendo seal of approval and that sort of thing we had. Are we just used to that level? And is it just, are we either spoiled? Are we just, what are they going to do next? And our generations like melding
away.
See, for
me, like, I think that it falls back into what you said before about like the generation turnover. But I think there's also a consumer side of it where these systems cost a lot of money. They're quite rare. Like, some people are taking a long time for them to get them, and you buy into the new generation, whether that's a philosophical thing or you literally buy a thing that can do a thing that your previous system couldn't do. And then if that, you know, those games don't trickle out, then you do sort of sit there looking at it going like, well, I guess we're just waiting then. And obviously that is just some of that is going to be a literal reality of the way that obviously the world is and everything, and the chip shortage and the pandemic and delays and everything else. But I think that is all part of, I guess, the general sort of feeling around Sony, where it's like, okay, we've got third-party exclusives, we're waiting for more stuff to come up. And there was a news story this morning before we started recording saying that there is another major third-party exclusive yet to be announced, but again, it is third-party. And even the likes of the potential Metal Gear Solid remake, I don't know what that would be classed as, because Bluepoint are first-party, Konami would be third. To run down some first-party teams and what they're working on, you know, you've got Naughty Dog are putting The Last of Us remake together, but they'll be doing whatever their other thing is, potentially The Last of Us 2 Factions, the Factions multiplayer stuff, and then maybe a new IP as well. Like I said, Bluepoint are potentially doing the Metal Gear Solid remake, or they're doing something else. FireSprite are doing Horizon Call of the Mountain, Media Molecule are still supporting Dreams, Insomniac are doing Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine, Sucker Punch are at the minute supporting Ghost of Tsushima Legends, but they'll have either a Ghost of Tsushima sequel or something else. But all those things are at least one more year in the oven. Like, there's the Knights of the Old Republic exclusive, but again, it's third party, and again, it's probably not going to be here this year. So it is just that feeling of like, okay, you've bought the new system, there'll be stuff to play on it, but it's not coming from the company that actually sold you the system in the first place.
Going back to God of War and Horizon for a second as well, I think for me personally, you know, we've had this conversation so many times on YouTube videos and podcasts and whatever. For me personally, like Roy said, you know, the decision to make those cross-platform wouldn't have been a last-minute thing. I know it seems more like that for Gran Turismo. I feel like for God of War and for Horizon especially, like Horizon must have been in development since, you know, 2017, you know, maybe pre-production started then. Like, that's been in the oven a long time. So that being a PS5 exclusive to begin with anyway, even if it was, it wouldn't have been that advanced, if that makes sense. It would have been like an early exclusive. It would have been an early next-gen game. And there's only so much you can do with that, even if you look back to something like Infamous Second Son, which was impressive, but it wasn't a Last of Us Part 2 or a Ghost of Tsushima. And I think that's kind of partly why I'm default excited for them. You know, I'm not blown away by them, but also I just think it's that when Horizon came out and when God of War 2018 came out, they were so brand new. You know, Horizon was pretty much the first time Sony did an open-world RPG-esque thing from a first-party studio. Yeah. And when God of War came out, that was an entire reinvigoration of a franchise. That was something that you know and loved, updated, modernized, played completely differently, had a completely different story, had a completely different setting. It was new inherently. With God of War Ragnarok, with Horizon Forbidden West, that newness has, at least for me, washed away somewhat, and I'm not excited about them because they're novel. Again, we've mentioned this before, but there's just a sense that I kind of know what they are. I know they're more known quantities than when they were first, you know, launching. I think that inherently saps some of the excitement for me, especially when that's bundled with the fact that I'm looking at them both, and I'm not, as of yet, seeing the jump from Uncharted 1 to Uncharted 2 with these two games. I'm seeing more Uncharted 2 to Uncharted 3 with them, which is still going to be very good, and I'm definitely not crapping all over them, but that definitely changes your expectations when it comes to levels of hype, for instance.
Yeah, man, because do you guys have that feeling when you saw, there was that stupid thing that blew up, well, I don't say blew up, there was like 10 people in a hashtag online complaining about the same boat animation in God of War Ragnarok, and that that was like the puddle gate of God of War. F that into the dirt. But that overall conversation around, like you said, them being sort of foregone conclusions, or you're looking at the gameplay for Ragnarok and going like, okay, this is very similar to 2018, as it should be, it's a sequel, but at the same time not feeling like it was made with the PS5 in mind, and like you're saying, it probably wasn't. They're almost glorified PS4 games in the best way possible, but for me, I think it is just that feeling of like, that's going to take over, and like I said, it's that acceptance thing of just, this is the best we can get out of the gaming industry from this company across 2022, with still leaving space for them to announce more stuff. I mean, all it'll take is a state of play saying that something's actually coming and it can drop in the second half of the year or whatever. But there is, like, all those things do sort of like coalesce for me, where it's just a feeling of like, cool, another God of War. A lot of the animations look the same. A lot of the feel looks quite similar. Graphically, it's not as much of an uptick as Horizon is. And that's just a weird feeling. It sounds like absolute moaning, which it is, but still.
There is one thing I wanted to jump at, whereas we have these cross-gen games and it's still very early, right? I feel like the reason why there's less excitement is because they're sequels. But then I think back to like early PS4 and us, and we've got like a bunch of games that were on last gen, which came out on that gen as well. Like, say, I'm thinking about Metal Gear Solid, The Phantom Pain. I'm thinking about Wolfenstein, The New Order. And I'm thinking about Shadow of Mordor. I think because they were all like, they all felt, even though Metal Gear was another Metal Gear, but they all felt like brand new because they weren't, we didn't really have other versions of them in a way.
Shadow of War had the Nemesis system.
Yeah. That's why, yeah. But like we had those new games there, and even though there were older game versions, like no one really paid attention to them apart from like the millions of obviously bought them. But in the great sphere, that all felt new, and that all felt like the next gen thing. But if you think about it, we're all playing last gen up-res stuff, which we kind of will be again in certain aspects. But I think because I don't know whether it takes too long for these games to come out now, hence why they're not making a third God of War in this sort of like sphere, as it would be, and hopefully we go and beat up some pharaohs after this. But like, I feel like because they're so...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Closely tied to the other versions. And like, I imagine if we didn't have what's going on right now, and then like Horizon was already out and everything like that, would it would it all be more forgiven if it happened the year before and things like that? Forgiven in a weird way, but I think because I was trying to think, like, why didn't any of us feel that way back then when these games were crossed then? And I think maybe it's just because they're not, these are so heavily sequels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, for me, like the start of the eighth generation, like it was nigh on the exact same feeling of waiting for it to kick in. Like I remember doing the Games of the Year back in 2014, and it was just PT was number one because it was like, well, there is Dragon Age Inquisition, there is like Shadow of Mordor, but it was still waiting for stuff. And then all of a sudden, 2015, it was Bloodborne, Metal Gear Solid 5, Fallout 4, The Witcher 3, and then we were away. And then 2015, all the way through to 2020, was rock solid. I'm kind of waiting for that to happen again.
Yeah. And even though Metal Gear Solid 5 felt so new in that gen, it was like I was saying, it was a last thing game. It's a weird thing for me to get my head around. I don't know why. They're gonna come around. They'll pop through my letterbox, and then I'll be in those games, and I'm probably gonna love them. All three of us probably are gonna be in them and enjoy them to some extent. I won't say love because you know no one knows what could happen. They could have Valkyrie fights, but there's gonna be that point. I think it's just it needs to click. And when it does, and then when we get like Dying Light 2 and these other things, and we've been playing Dying Light 2 for how many years is 500 hours? When we get to that point.
On your way to Moscow.
We'll be there then. We just need a jump start in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something in what you were talking about there, Roy, with the reality of these games taking as long as they do, kind of makes your expectations go much larger than what you might have in previous generations where the turnaround was a little bit quicker. I think if Horizon Forbidden West came out in 2020, for instance, on the PS4, we would have maybe been more excited or maybe more forgiven that it doesn't look like a huge, huge, huge jump up because it hasn't been a five-year wait.
It doesn't need to be. Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been an entire generation sitting out after one game and then, you know, releasing on brand new hardware. I think when you go from Uncharted 1 to 2 to 3, and even into The Last of Us, you know, Uncharted 3 and The Last of Us being made at the same time, like, the process of iteration feels more forgivable because you're getting them on a much faster turnaround, and you don't expect these huge jumps. You don't expect these huge revolution of ideas and mechanics in the same way that you do if you wait 5 years for a game, 6 years for a game, 7 years for a game.
Well, the thing is,
Dying Light 2.
Yeah, something that goes hand in hand with that is that I feel like they very much announced the PS5 alongside with this stuff. Like that original God of War teaser made it out to be a PS5 game. It was very much like, this is the next generation. You've got all these things coming up. And then finding out that they're cross-compatible obviously makes business sense and obviously just is the reality of the world. But I feel like that also factors into a lot of the expectation. It's like, you know, because God of War, like 2018 seminal game, the follow-up to that, now on next-generation hardware. Oh my God, what's that going to be? Well, it's kind of just like an up-res PS4 game. Like it's like when Cyberpunk came out and we're still waiting for the proper next gen version of it, and it's like that kind of feeling. And it's not to take away from the quality of these games, they're still going to be absolutely stellar. I think there's just that feeling of Sony as a company sort of trying to roll with as many punches as possible, where at least on the Microsoft side, I mean Switch, Nintendo are off on an island all their own doing their own thing. Here's a game from 1985 on the Switch monthly service, but you know the way that Sony are doing stuff to sort of like bring it all back to them as a company and how they feel, I guess I can bounce that back out as a question. Like, how do you guys feel about Sony as a company right now? Because I can point to things where I feel like they're floundering.
For me, I'm more sympathetic towards them because, like you said, you know, they are rolling with a lot of punches. You know, I'm sure most of their plans for this year and last year, you know, weren't intended or weren't what they wanted. And it's just been in response to the pandemic, in response to the chip shortage, in response to not being able to put PS5s in houses and stuff. And for me, it does make me more sympathetic. And I do like that they've at least supplanted that with third-party exclusives. You know, we mentioned the fact that they have the three big cross-gen games. But to their credit, you know, they still have signed those deals with second-party, signed those deals with third-party to get stuff like Forspoken and Final Fantasy 16, et cetera, out on the PS5 this year or out on a Sony console.
Sifu as well, to be honest.
That. Sifu, exactly, yeah. Or Ghostwire Tokyo, that weird holdover from
that'll the be Bethesda the first deal. One that goes, yeah.
Totally, totally. But the fact that they have those, like for me, it's a strong slate. It is a strong slate. Just it is telling that they've had to supplant the first party studios with second and third parties to get those PS5 exclusive games out. And that's not necessarily a problem. That is them rolling with the punches. It's just intriguing to talk about. I hope this isn't being perceived as me saying it's a bad year for Sony. You know, they need to pluck themselves up or anything. It's fascinating. It's watching companies like this deal with these huge extenuating circumstances and shift their plans seemingly on the fly.
I think Yeah, I think multiple things can be true. Like, I think it can be a bit disappointing that the next generation in full hasn't kicked off yet, but also you can be massively thankful for God of War, Horizon, and Gran Turismo all in the same year and on a system that will more than do them justice. Like, I think both those things can be true. It's not that what we're getting is bad. It's just that I can just speak for myself. I had bigger expectations for where we would be more than a year into the generation, but I also didn't think we'd still be in the pandemic. So you kind of got to just roll with those budgets.
Yeah. And I'd like to say there doesn't seem to be much of a land grab of significance in people's eyes with the Sony stuff. We seem to be sort of hobbling out of what was left, or what is now like the proper Jim Ryan era, whereas like you got Microsoft buying Bethesda and everything like that. And as one Nibel has just put out on Twitter, that they're nearing the end, they're nearing a deal to buy Activision. Microsoft.
Okay.
What?
Let's react to that in real
very
time.
Very big. Is that
you
just
have to
right
imagine.
Now?
You have to imagine that now that comes with all the Blizzard stuff, and then it just locks more. Like, think of how close PlayStation are with Call of Duty right now, and their marketing and all that sort of gimmicks. And then this is just happening. And as I've put that bombshell out there and sort of maybe derailed what's happening, it's going to come to Game Pass.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could do a couple minutes reacting to this. So this comes from, Bloomberg themselves, but someone called Walter Bloomberg, who's been shared around, saying that Microsoft are nearing a deal to buy Activision, according to the Wall Street Journal, which is a hell of a thing. We can do a couple. Josh Brown, what's your immediate thoughts on Xbox owning your tracer bullets, mate? Carry on.
My immediate thought is that we need to do a news on this as we finish doing the podcast. But also, just in the moment, like, for me, I think that, I mean, it's difficult, right? Because I don't like the idea of a monopoly of one company just owning absolutely everything. On the other hand, I think Activision is an absolute trash company who is just like not making good games, is not doing anything when it comes to sorting out the horrifying allegations inside of the studios that they own. And it's like they are at an all-time low. And if this acquisition leads to a better working environment and it leads to better games, because I have no faith in Activision as a company as they currently are with their own autonomy.
This is more an Xbox conversation because it is Microsoft, but that's a very, very valid point. They would all of a sudden be represented by, they'd have to be part of the Xbox brand. They would answer to Phil Spencer. They would have to have all these different quality checks in mind that they don't have. There was that whole thing where Phil Spencer said that they have changed the way they do things after all the allegations and everything came out in terms of their working relationship. If the solution to that is them going, actually, we'll just take it over and do it ourselves, then maybe that does work out better. But that's madness, to be fair.
And what was the last deal that Sony did where we were blown away? Not saying like everyone should be throwing their money around and we should to the top until we just go so far. Like they bought FireSprite, and then before that they bought I'm trying to think of that Fighting League, or what is it called?
The esports
stuff. Like there's they bought the studio that did Demon's Souls.
Bluepoint. Yes.
No, Bluepoint. That was a...
Oh, sorry, I was going to say one thing that's
that
like...
That would have been a mad deal, but...
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. They do what deals they can, but that's always the absolute brass tacks money side of it. If you literally just tot up what each company has access to, Microsoft and the Xbox wing of Microsoft has access to a hell of a lot more money than Sony PlayStation, and they can do these ridiculous deals. That's kind of the massive disparity between the amount of money thrown at Bethesda versus the amount of money thrown at Insomniac, for example. That's the thing, if that's a potential future for the company. Which I guess does make it relevant to the PlayStation side of things, because if this is true, then I wonder just how much, you know, Microsoft or Xbox sees an opportunity and sees a Sony that are very much reacting to what they're doing. Because the next thing we were going to talk about is a couple of patents that have surfaced again about backwards compatibility and cloud streaming on PlayStation, and the fact that PS3 games are showing up on the PlayStation Store, which very much, and you know, we know that they're doing the codename Spartacus program, which is their version of Game Pass. But like I said, I mentioned the word floundering because it feels like Sony are always looking at the competition, always reacting to what's going on, which is fine if you have enough time to turn those things around. But if Microsoft / Xbox spent the last 9 years planning every single part of this, planning the Bethesda acquisition, planning Game Pass, planning cloud streaming, and then also getting Activision, then them trying to chase with copies of Prince of Persia and Bejeweled 3 is going to do very little.
100%, man. Like, it's just like Microsoft has.
We've got PSVR, guys.
Resources, and Sony just can't fight them on that front. Like, the wall of money that Ian Microsoft has to throw at Xbox is ridiculous. So we've seen already Sony trying to be smarter with their acquisitions. They have bought smaller studios in comparison to huge publishers like Microsoft's been doing, you know, but that's still, I think, still being valuable for them. Like Roy was kind of saying, like you were alluding to there, Scott, you know, I don't want to see some kind of like big land grab of suddenly everyone is panicking and trying to just buy up everything. I don't think that is going to be healthy, even though it is exciting to talk about. For me, I like to see them investing in respected, trustworthy partners like Insomniac, who can come in and make you like three amazing games in 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, that's smart acquisition.
You could make, I want to see you more. You can make amazing games like that, right? Or you could just go around and Phil Spencer could become Daniel Plainview and just start drinking their milkshake all around them until they eventually just have to put Game Pass on their machine. It's just like Phil looks at something and goes, what's this? Why don't I own this? And then he gets on a horse and then he rides across country or wherever the office is and he goes, come on, how many coins?
Ex bazooka. The thing is, like, it's interesting with this because time's a flat circle, but I did a predictions thing a couple of years ago, predictions for the new generation, and I thought this. I thought that if we're dealing with libraries of content, Game Pass style, you're dealing with exclusive contracts, whether they're timed stuff or whatever, that for me only makes me think of a future in gaming where every company is going, okay, we need to lock down as much stuff as possible because we're dealing with a monthly rollout program or a monthly rollout model, and that'll be more like the old school where more franchises were platform exclusive because it only bolsters the reason for you to invest in that system. So I think this is the way that we're going, and I think that this is maybe the wider battle plan that Microsoft's had all along, just locking everything down to their, you know, the Game Pass system and the monthly stuff and Game Pass Ultimate and different tiers of affording things, like they did in Forza, where they sort of made retail numbers and they had the Game Pass subscriptions alongside. I wonder if that's the thing. To bring it back to Sony, like I said, they've got patents for backwards compatibility and the cloud streaming stuff. Hello.
It's official.
No f-ing way, is it?
Yeah, it's on Microsoft. It's on Microsoft.
Oh my god!
What the fuck?
They've just got Activision, Blizzard, and King.
That is insane. That's actually insane.
Oh my. Well, there you go. There's live reactions.
This is exactly, man, like probably what they wanted. They just changed a podcast all about PlayStation to be about Microsoft now because they just slapped their water money down.
Why? Why would you buy King? Why would you buy the Clash of Clans, lads? What's the point?
Well, it's funny, man, because, I mean, we'll talk about this probably in another podcast, dissecting it for the entire year, but, I mean, that comes hot from the heels of Take-Two buying a giant mobile company as well, you know? So it's just like, yeah,
I guess
Uber up everyone, I suppose.
I'm just taking a photo there because I've got to get our faces on that. We'll deal with this in an upcoming news, which will likely be on the channel by the time this podcast goes out, because we'll be having this thing up live ASAP because, yeah, this is insane. But like Josh says, every move they're making is very much skewering Sony / PlayStation to the wall. This is like a master plan at the end of like the third act of the movie where the person has planned everything the entire time, because I guess we always thought they were going to take the last generation lying down, but every beat of this is absolutely insane.
All of this is going to come in Game Pass. All of their previous games. World of Warcraft be on Game Pass?
Well, so there's a list on the graphic. They've just bought Overwatch, Diablo, Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Candy Crush, LOL, and StarCraft. Four out of six of them are absolutely huge. I know the Candy Crush still has its fans and everything, but Call of Duty now belongs to Xbox.
That is...
They own one of the biggest gaming franchises of all time, just the Call of Duty, and then they have that massive back catalogue of great stuff that have been put out in the past. This is...
I'm not prepared to riff on this. I'm not good with improvisation. I cannot take something this magnitude.
This is all it needs to be. The one last point I had was PlayStation VR 2. Do you want to attempt to do that?
Who cares? Who cares? My most exciting thing about the entire year. I don't care anymore.
Microsoft owns Call of Duty. Call of Duty is an Xbox franchise now.
I think that's it. I think that's
actually it.
I don't think we can say anything more.
No, we will wrap the hell up. Come find us. Come across to the YouTube channel. We're going to do a massively reactive news to this, and we'll pick this stuff apart going forward. Because as you've clearly heard, we've tried to react to arguably the biggest news in gaming history, and we've done as best as we can. So for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
I drink your milkshake.
They are slurping. And Josh Brown.
I don't know what I am speechless.
This has been PlayStation Podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.